Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. Today's Wednesday, and it is Wednesday. Now, I'm not doing the show live. I'm recording it. This is about less than 2 hours before showtime, so hopefully nothing catastrophic will happen in the meantime. But we got plenty of stuff to talk about in almost real time. And as usual, I do want to request that you go to RBN, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the donate button and send Inferium. I don't know if you can do that. That's cryptocurrency. I don't know if we accept cryptocurrencies at RBN, but you can send that. You can just send whatever. The kitchen sink, because this is important. And of course, the CoCertified app. So much fun. And CoCertified is totally my sponsor. It does a lot of great work, and it's the way forward. This is the way out of our mess, is through knowing. And the CoCertified app helps you know. Okay, well, Mr. T, hold on 1 second. Okay, well, through the miracle of the pause button, I was able to see that Mr. T, my engineer, was alerting me of the presence of an unauthorized rodent scampering across our yard. Thank you very much. Well, I think there's an interesting issue. We talked about it on David Duke's show. We talked about it on Stormfront this morning. Maybe you heard it, maybe you didn't. And I don't want to go too much on this, but it's interesting. We have this bill that recently passed the Florida legislature, and it is House Bill 741 on anti-Semitism. And this is an interesting bill. It prohibits, anti-Semitism. It defines anti-Semitism. It prohibits discrimination in Florida K through 20 public education system, meaning all the way through the universities, based on religion. So you can't discriminate based on religion. And I guess that's the Jewish angle there, the anti-Semitism angle. And requires public schools, including universities, to consider anti-Semitism under certain instances of discrimination. Okay, so, what could be wrong there? What is anti-Semitism? How is anti-Semitism defined? And is the devil in the detail? Actually, regardless of the detail. Okay, and actually, you know, there's parts of it, actually big parts of the bill, go beyond just the public school system. Let's get down to it. Let's look at it. So, first of all, this bill, it reclassifies penalties for felonies and misdemeanors. Okay, so let's read it. Okay. The penalty for any felony or misdemeanor shall be reclassified as provided in this subsection if the commission of such felony or misdemeanor evidences prejudice based on the race, color, ancestry, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, national origin, homeless status, or advanced age of the victim. Okay, so they've inserted religion in here. And so, for instance, a misdemeanor of the second degree, if it was a second degree misdemeanor, it's going to be reclassified, upgraded into a first degree misdemeanor. A misdemeanor of the first degree is reclassified to a felony. Okay, and on and on. So everything gets notched up a grade if there is evidence of prejudice. Well, here's the thing. I mean, a lot of this is aimed at BDS, boycott, divestment, and sanctions. It's not exclusively aimed at that, but a lot of it is. Well, let's go on. So religion, this continues, religion includes, but is not limited to, anti-Semitism. Okay. Nothing else is specified. It's not limited to anti-Semitism, but it certainly includes anti-Semitism. Okay. For the purposes of this section, the term anti-Semitism includes all of the following. Okay, so let's read it. Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of the Jewish people, which may be expressed as hatred towards Jewish people. So you're not allowed to hate Jewish people. Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism directed towards a Jewish or non-Jewish individual, or his or her property, or toward Jewish community institutions or religious facilities. Okay, so anti-Semitism includes rhetoric directed against Jews and Jewish institutions, community institutions or religious facilities. Is AIPAC a community institution? I mean, certainly the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League of the B'nai B'rith, that would be a Jewish community institution. Let's continue reading. Okay, so specifically, what are examples? Examples of anti-Semitism include, one, calling for, aiding, or justifying the killing or harming of Jews, often in the name of a radical ideology or an extremist view of religion. Okay, well, I mean, I'm not calling for killing or harming anybody, but let's face it, didn't our government justify, doesn't it always justify the killing of enemies in war, or even not in war? Didn't the Jewish Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, justify the killing of 500,000 Iraqi children? Didn't she say, we think the price is worth it? I seem to recall having seen that video numerous times. I think she was justifying the killing and harming of Iraqi children. But, okay, she didn't do it in Florida. Okay, number two, making mendacious, dehumanizing, demonizing, or stereotypical allegations about Jews. Okay, you can't make stereotypical allegations about Jews as such, or the power of Jews as a collective, including allegations such as the myth about a world Jewish conspiracy, or of Jews. Okay, so you cannot make allegations of Jews controlling the media, economy, government, or other societal institutions. Okay, now personally, I avoid the word control because I think there's a high threshold for control. I prefer dominate, and I think dominate. I always talk about them dominating the media. They certainly dominate the media. Do they control it? Control is a pretty strong word, but they dominate it. I wonder if I could get away with that in Florida. They certainly dominate the media. They dominate the economy. They obviously dominate the Florida government. This bill was voted on unanimously. Every single senator who, according to the article I read, every single senator on the floor when this bill was passed was a co-sponsor. And it is going to be signed at a signing ceremony in Israel. So the Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, is bringing his cabinet over to Israel. And they're going to sign it in Israel. No control here, bub. All right, let's go on to number three. Number three, another example of anti-Semitism. Let's stick with number two. So you're not allowed to make stereotypical allegations about Jews. Stereotypical. I recall once a little boy inviting his classmates to his bar mitzvah. And, of course, you know, some of them weren't Jewish, and one classmate asked, "Well, what are we supposed to bring or give you for bar mitzvah present?" And he wrote back, "Well, I'm Jewish, so give me money so I can keep it forever and ever." Now, he was a Jewish kid himself, he was making a stereotypical assertion about Jews. He was making a stereotypical allegation that because he was a Jew, he wanted money to keep forever and ever. And this was in a public school setting. That would be illegal under this law. All right. Here's the thing. It was a funny thing to say. Jewish comedians, self-deprecating Jewish comedians, there's a bunch of them, Seinfeld, isn't his whole shtick poking fun at Jewish stereotypes, actually kind of sanitizing them and making them seem fuzzy and warm? But I mean, still, they are stereotypes. Number three, accusing Jews as a people of being responsible for real or imagined wrongdoing committed by a single Jewish person or group, the state of Israel, or even for acts committed by non-Jews. Okay, so you cannot accuse Jews as a people of being responsible for real wrongdoings committed by the state of Israel. Now, the state of Israel claims to be the state of all Jews around the world. So the state of Israel claims to represent all Jews around the world. And if it commits a crime, the state of Israel, aren't they implicating all Jews around the world? They say that they represent all Jews around the world. And yet, if we were to say that that Jews support, you know, in general, Jews as a people support Israel, or Israel represents Jews and Israel represents Jews and Israel is committing war crimes, which they are. They're committing war crimes, and they're committing them in the name of the Jewish people. And their airplanes and weapons bear Jewish religious symbols. So, aren't Germans, aren't they paying reparations? Germans as a people, regardless of whether or not they were born at what time, aren't they paying reparations for events that took place many, many years ago? Huh. All right. Let's go on. Because there's something in here about double standards, which is going to be really rich. All right. Accusing Jews as a people or the state of Israel of inventing or exaggerating the Holocaust. All right, well, okay, so there certainly have been exaggerations of the Holocaust. Everybody knows that. I guess if you say such and such individual invented or exaggerated his Holocaust stories, because we know there's lots of people who have made all sorts of outlandish things, you know, about masturbation machines, like these machines that masturbated Jews to death. I mean, there have been all sorts of weird allegations. Well, you can't accuse Jews as a people of that. All right, but the state of Israel, if, let's just say, at the state of Israel, Israel has their Holocaust shrine. I forgot the name of it. Something Yashim. I can't remember. At any rate, if at their Holocaust memorial, the state-sponsored Holocaust memorial, if there is anything untrue or exaggerated, are you allowed to point that out? According to this law, you couldn't point it out. You can't accuse the state of Israel of exaggerating the Holocaust, even though they do. Jews as a people. Well, you see, you know, the whole thing as a people. And I guess what? If we say, well, I'm not saying all Jews, can you get away with that? but certainly Israel. I mean, Israel, exaggerating. Okay. Accusing Jewish citizens of countries other than Israel of being more loyal to Israel, or the alleged priorities of Jews worldwide than to the interests of their own nations. Okay. So you cannot, you're not allowed to accuse Jewish citizens of countries other than Israel. Well, what about dual citizens? Okay. So if you're a dual citizen, you are a country, you are a citizen of a country other than Israel. If you're a dual citizen of the United States and Israel, you are a citizen of the United States. Can you be accused of being more loyal to Israel if you are, like, for instance, Jeffrey Goldberg, the editor-in-chief of the Atlantic Magazine, for instance, who enlisted in the Israeli military and was a military prison guard at, these prisons where they torture Palestinians. He didn't enlist in the U.S. Army. He enlisted in the Israeli Army. Is that an indication that he was more loyal to Israel? I think you could make that accusation. No, but you couldn't make that accusation because he is a citizen of a country other than Israel. He is a citizen of the United States. He's a dual citizen, but he's a citizen of the United States. So there you go. It's very and or you cannot accuse them of being more loyal to Jews worldwide than to the interests of their own nation. And I mean, here's the thing. You've got Victoria Nuland. How is it in the interest of the United States to be provoking a war with Russia? Victoria Nuland or Julia Yoffe, all these people, Max Boot, and Yoffe and Boot weren't born in America. They're naturalized. They left this Soviet Union as kids and came here and got put on the fast track to elite positions and are pushing for war with Russia, which isn't, how would that be in the interests of America? Now, is it in the interests of Jews worldwide? A lot of Jews think so, because a lot of Jews hate Vladimir Putin, because Vladimir Putin ended the big party after the dismemberment of the Soviet Union under the days of the presidency of Boris Yeltsin, when the Jewish privatization minister, Anatoly Chubais, in conjunction with Jewish advisors from the United States, like Harvard professor Jeffrey Sachs, future Harvard president and Secretary of Treasury Lawrence Summers, and future Obama budget director Peter Orszag, where they helped the soon-to-be Jewish oligarchs in Russia connect up with Jewish international financiers like George Soros and purchase all of the assets of the that were state assets that were up for grabs in this harebrained privatization scheme, which took place at a time of famine, and the goyim were only too happy to sell off these privatization vouchers for a pittance in order to buy some food to people who were connected to world Jewish finance. Were these Jews more loyal? The Jews calling for a war with Russia, are they more loyal to America, or are they more loyal to international Jewish interests? You're not allowed to ask. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. Well, we've been talking about the Florida anti-Semitism bill, but wait, there's more. So it goes on. It goes on. There's a part two. Examples of anti-Semitism related to Israel include, okay, so what is, how does it relate to Israel? Demonizing Israel by using the symbols and images associated with classic anti-Semitism to characterize Israel. What would that be? Maybe the Happy Merchant meme. Actually, it would mean the Happy Merchant meme. Let me just read the whole thing. Demonizing Israel by using symbols and images associated with classic anti-Semitism to characterize Israel, Israelis, drawing comparisons of contemporary Israeli policy to that of the Nazis, or blaming Israel for all interreligious or political tensions. All right, so symbols associated with classic anti-Semitism. Well, I mean, the Happy Merchant meme, I guess, I mean, it's relatively recent, but would it be associated with classic anti-Semitism? I think you could certainly make that, you could make that argument, you could make that case. And so if you were to characterize, if you were to put the Happy Merchant meme to represent Israel in some sort of meme or cartoon, or Israelis, well, Benjamin Netanyahu, if you did anything like that, that is anti-Semitism. And that is, well, it is banned in public schools. It is banned in public schools. So a university, well, you couldn't do it in the university. Okay, what's next? Applying a double standard to Israel by requiring behavior of Israel that is not expected or demanded of any other democratic nation, or focusing peace or human rights investigations only on Israel. Well, here's the thing. There is a double standard, and the double standard is Israel gets away with everything. Israel is not expected. For instance, it has not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and of course, any other country that hasn't signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and has a nuclear program, and of course, Israel has more than a nuclear program, they've got a giant nuclear arsenal. Any other country is subject to all sorts of sanctions. Israel's not. There's a double standard there. How about applying a single standard? No, that's not what they want. Focusing peace or human rights investigations only on Israel. Well, there are a lot of things that you could focus on that only do pertain to Israel. If you are part of a Palestinian solidarity movement, you're not going to be focusing your human rights investigations on Australia or Malaysia. Of course, it's going to be focused on Israel. Delegitimizing Israel by denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination and denying Israel the right to exist. Now, if you look up right to exist, do a Google search for right to exist, and you'll find, let's just say you find 6 million hits. And then if you just do, it's probably going to be more like 6 billion. And then if you do right to exist in Israel, it's going to be like, you know, 5 billion. The vast majority of references to right to exist is referring to Israel. It's a word. The right to exist basically was invented for Israel. Did anybody ever talk about Yugoslavia's right to exist or the Soviet Union's right to exist? No. States don't have a right to exist. And, I mean, this is enshrined in our Declaration of Independence from time to time, you know, in the events of mankind, the people decide that they want another state. I can't remember exactly what the wording is, but if you're going to have self-determination means that the people determine the state. And so the states don't have a right to exist. To have a right to self-determination and then the state has a right to exist. If the people have a right to self-determination, then the state can't have a right to exist because one has to trump the other. You can't have both. However, criticism of Israel that is similar to criticism toward any other country may not be regarded as anti-Semitic. Well, of course, Israel doesn't act like any other country. All right, and then, this subsection does not diminish or infringe upon any right protected under the First Amendment. The heck it doesn't. Well, so this is the state of affairs in the United States at this time. We have, this is Orwellian, because the fact of the matter is Jews have special rights. Israel has a special status. And I noticed on Tucker's show last night, George Papadopoulos, who was caught up in all of this Russia hoax business. Of course, he's not really a Russian agent. He's really an Israeli agent, and basically, didn't basically admit it. He said he was. He said that, go back and watch Tucker from, I believe it was last night, and he was saying that people were after him because he was an Israeli agent. And in fact, Israel is our greatest ally in the world, not in the Middle East, but in the world. It is our greatest ally in the world, George Papadopoulos. All right, we're coming up on the next break. We'll be right back. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future. welcome back to the show. Well, I think I've gone into that bill enough as it is. And if you don't live in Florida, maybe it doesn't seem like a big deal. Of course, maybe nothing is going to be a big deal. Aren't we just being killed by a thousand paper cuts? Isn't that what it is? And this is one of them. You've got this whole freedom of speech business going on. There's an attack on freedom of speech. It used to be, people would say, I disagree vehemently with everything you say, but I would defend to the death your right to say it. You would hear people say that. And you don't hear that anymore. Increasingly, speech that is not approved of by the powers that be, that speech is considered hate speech. And hate speech is violence. So the speech is violence. And you can't shout fire in a crowded theater. Now, of course, actually, you can shout fire in a crowded theater if the theater is on fire, right? That's certainly protected speech. And I think we can, I don't think we're shouting fire in a, well, what are we shouting? Fire in a crowded theater? I think we are making a case for very severe threat that our people are under. And, you know, you could say that's white people, but you could go beyond white people, that the people of the world, the people of the United States, white and non-white alike, white people are particularly threatened, but we're all, you know, if freedom of speech is denied white people, it's going to be denied to everybody. You know, it is. It's being denied to people. And why is speech so important? Well, we have a system still that through speech, through nonviolent means, we can determine our government. We can still do that. The election of Donald Trump, as unfortunately as everything has played out, I wouldn't believe for a second that Donald Trump was part of the plan. You know, I think he was elected, and there's been Plan B and Plan C and Plan D, and eventually they got things more or less under control. It seems like things are under control, but you know, I wouldn't believe for a second that he was part of the plan. And we have an electoral system that might not work very well, but it worked well enough. It worked well enough that somebody like Donald Trump, he had $6 billion or $9 billion. He had billions of dollars to work with. He wasn't just anybody, but somebody from outside the system who ruffled lots of feathers and who engendered greater opposition from the establishment than any other candidate perhaps in American history. So much of what happened to Donald Trump was unprecedented. And this was because we still have at least a slightly functioning electoral system, and we still have at least a certain amount of freedom of speech. Now, this is going to be, they're trying to extinguish it. And this will be a problem for all of us. Now, another phenomenon that's going on, and it's related, is the surveillance of everything that we do. And a lot of this has to do with technology. So there is so much, our powers that be, which isn't only the government, but our powers that be, know so much more about us than the Soviet rulers ever did about their population. You know, I remember I was doing a lot of research. I was studying Russian, wasn't very good at it, but I was studying Russian and doing a lot of research into the Soviet Union during the late Gorbachev era. I was kind of enamored with Mikhail Gorbachev, and I thought he was trying to do something very bold and important with the Soviet Union. It didn't work out so well. but I thought he had very good intentions. But I remember reading books, and one of the books, it would have been translated into English. My Russian was never good enough to read books, except a few pages at a time in Russian. But the author was talking about the computer revolution that was going on in the United States. Now, this was before the internet per se, but you had personal computers. And he was comparing this digital revolution in the United States with the Soviet technology infrastructure, their inability to master the technology of the ballpoint pen. There were ballpoint pens in Russia, but they'd never gotten very good. And so pencils and, I guess, fountain pens were still common even in the 1980s. So the Soviets never had this kind of technology. They had paper, and there were files, physical paper files, and the KGB had files on people. Now, the point of the files, and I think it's probably more obvious with paper files, was so that if somebody was stepped out of line, you could go back and have something to get them on. Because in general, if somebody stepped out of line, they weren't put in prison for stepping out of line. Not formally. They were put in prison for, some kind of charge. And it would, you talk about trumped up charges. It could be, a housing code violation or a rent violation or this or that. And now what they have today with us, my goodness. So most of our transactions are not cash. They're a credit card. So you've got all our credit card information, which is in database form. And you know something? I don't mean to keep harping on this, but it is true that a lot of the credit card settlements go through Israeli companies. They do. A lot of Israeli companies are involved in the billing for our telecommunications, so they get all this metadata on who's calling whom. There's a lot of metadata about that. So there's our telecommunications. Hey, guess what? Most of us have these cell phones that we carry around, and the cell phones are every few seconds or whatever are putting out a tiny little signal that gets received by the nearby cell phone towers in order to pinpoint our location, so that if there is a call to us, that will be found. Have you ever wondered about that? So the cell phone companies know where you are in real time, and they can track where you are, where you've been. So all of our transactions are tracked, our communications are tracked, our movements are tracked. So there is all this information. Then, of course, we get to Google and Facebook and all of that. And so our browsing histories obviously are tracked. You ever look for dog food? You go on a dog food website or something, and then the next thing you know, every time you pull up your Gmail or your Hotmail or your whatever mail, you start seeing a lot of ads for dog food, right? So that's not a coincidence. This is being tracked. So there's all this information out there. And, sometimes we've heard about, the NSA, they we're gaining access to a lot of this information. And they were saying, we're trying to build a profile so that we can identify terrorists before they strike. Well, I don't think so. I don't think, because that's really complicated. When you've got 300 million plus people in the United States, and who knows what they're tracking on foreigners. So you've got potentially billions of people that they're trying to track. And then you've got, all of this credit card data, all of the telephone data, communications, internet browsing, location. That's so much information. And if you've ever done any programming, computer program, and I have, the idea of being able to write algorithms to identify people is pretty daggone tough. Unless you're going to do something really, really simple, like just, so you're not, it's not anything sophisticated, but simply, did anybody do a search for the Holocaust? You know, did the Holocaust happen? Something like that. No, the purpose is to build files, in effect, have files. And so if somebody then comes to their attention, if their head pops up, they're on the radar screen, oh, this new person, we got this new person. What is in this new person's file? Let's go back, because show me the man, I'll show you the crime. That was what the KGB head years ago said, or was it Barry? I don't know. Show me the man, I'll show you the crime. And that was the purpose of the files that the KGB kept on everybody. So that's the purpose. Show me the man, I'll show you the crime. And when you look at the draconian penalties that some people who stepped out of line face, think of Jacob Goodwin from Charlottesville, who's facing, well, not facing, he is what, almost 2 years into an 8-year sentence, I guess a year and a half into it, including time served. He's been in prison for over a year and a half, and he's facing 8 years. What? For defending an old man from a criminal black protester. The black protester at Charlottesville, who clubbed this old man with a mag light, which they are intended to be used as clubs. And he obviously wasn't needing to illuminate anything at, you know, 12 noon on a hot August day in the middle of the street in Charlottesville. No, he was carrying it as a club. He wheeled it as a club. And Jacob Goodwin and a couple of other people whose names I don't have memorized defended the man. And in like the few seconds, the 3 or 4 seconds of the skirmish, DeAndre Harris, the black, and I have to say it, black thug, because that's what he was, who was knocked to the ground. He wound up getting his forehead cut, and he ran off. When he was on the ground, a couple of people kicked him there's a couple of kicks. But this was somebody who had followed the rally participants in violation of the governor's orders to disperse, followed and harassed them and attacked them. And simply for fighting back, Jacob Goodwin, 8 years in prison. Well, you can look at the, you know, Virginia statute, and if somebody's on the ground and kicking them is excessive, okay, that was what it was. Who doesn't have something in their record? I think pretty much anybody does. It's hard to be completely clean about everything, especially something common sense. I mean, it's common sense that if somebody is being attacked and you defend that person, common sense would say that you should be immune to prosecution from it. It's not like DeAndre Harris died. It's not like he sustained any serious injuries. And he was the perpetrator. Does everybody know that in Virginia, if somebody's on the ground, then kicking them would be a violation of such and such code? Does everybody know that maybe if you're transferring your automobile to somebody else, that you need to, I don't know, do whatever? I think pretty much anybody's vulnerable. And then forget about laws. If they've got all your browsing history, okay, so you did go to Stormfront, you did go to sites that are not approved, sites that would violate the Florida statute. What about that? You know, we've got draconian laws in New Zealand now. If you were to share the manifesto, the 90-page manifesto written by the guy who shot the mosque, if you share that with somebody, is that 10 years in prison or 14 years in prison? I think it's 14 years. If you read it, if you have it on your device, and when you read something, it at least temporarily gets downloaded to your device, that's 10 years. And if you share it with somebody, that's 14 years in prison. So, you know, right now, the Jacob Goodwin cases are relatively few and far between. I'm not saying FEMA camps are right around the corner. I'm saying it's 1,000 paper cuts. And we're getting there. And we're getting cut up. We've got a lot of paper cuts. And, you know, what happened to Jacob Goodwin is a paper cut. And this Florida bill is a paper cut. And they're adding up. And we are getting to the point where, like I said, it wasn't long ago that anybody would say, oh, I believe in freedom of speech. And now it's not just that people are saying, well, yeah, but there are limits to freedom of speech. Now you are having, it's perfectly okay on university campuses to say free speech is violence. Free speech is white supremacy. So we're really getting there. This has been a slow process, and I don't expect a sudden collapse in things. It's been a slow process. It'll probably continue to be a slow process. But even then, you never know. And getting back to the Soviet Union, there were a lot of people who saw signs, but I don't know of anybody who predicted anything that close to what wound up happening. There was a French, at least in the West, I don't know about inside the Soviet Union, because a lot of things that people might have talked about in whispers weren't getting published. But outside the Soviet Union, there was a French political scientist, a woman named Hélène Carrière-Doncas, and she had written a book called... She wrote two books. One was The Confiscated Power, and then the other was The Collapse of an Empire. And The Collapse of an Empire, that was... She did predict the end of the Soviet Union. But she didn't really predict how it would happen. She thought it was going to be from the Muslim birth rate. It wound up being from the European side, and the Muslims were actually reluctant to have the Soviet Union break up. But she was about as close as anybody. But yet, it was still a surprise, and it happened very fast. I'll be right back. Thank you. welcome back to the show. Well, so in these last few minutes, I do want to remind you, we do still have freedom of speech on RBN. So make sure you support RBN. It's not easy to keep this going. It really isn't. Don't take it for granted. Don't take anything for granted. So support RBN. We've got, we still have an internet. We can't, I know this, I'm not always ahead of the curve on things. I'm not. But I do know that a few years ago, I kept hearing people around me saying, well, we've got the internet now, and so everything's different. I was saying, we've got the internet now, but don't count on it. Don't count on it. The internet has all sorts of choke points. I've been amazed to find that virtually all of the advertising revenue on the internet is through either Google or Facebook. The vast majority, unless I'm very much mistaken, the vast majority of advertising revenue for the internet is through Google and Facebook. Now, there's still a lot of advertising revenue that's, you know, being gobbled up by TV stations, newspapers, and whatnot. But the on the internet, it's through Google and Facebook. So they largely control the purse strings. And in order to make money on the internet, it's tough. You've got the credit card companies. So you know, Google and Facebook, Facebook in particular kicks people off of their platform. You know, Alex Jones has been kicked off a few times. Is David Duke kicked off? He doesn't do anything on Facebook. I don't know if he's been formally kicked off. Then you've got Google, and they run YouTube, and they demonetize videos. They demonetize my videos, but my videos aren't monetized in the first place, so it really doesn't matter when they do it. And check out the Patrick Slattery YouTube channel. It's a great place to go for, if you want to. Sometimes it's more, getting things through YouTube is more convenient. I can't guarantee that I'm always going to have a YouTube account, and that's why RBN is important. But I do recycle these shows on YouTube for convenience. There's also the credit card companies, the settlement companies. There is a stranglehold that's coming down, and if you can't get advertising, if you can't solicit for donations, which is, you know, you need the credit card companies to solicit for donations for the most part, then it relegates people like myself to amateur status. I don't make a living off of this. We can't make a living off of what we're doing, and so we have to have normie jobs or whatever, and that takes time away from, you know, the content that we produce. That's why you need to support, just like public radio. Public radio gets supported. People donate money. You gotta donate money to RBN and keep it going. It's the only way that we can get our message out, and we still can get our message out throughout, despite all these obstacles, and we do make a lot of progress, but they're coming at us harder and harder. We still have this opportunity, and we don't know exactly how long we're going to have it. Things like in the Soviet Union, nobody predicted that it was going to fall apart in a decade, less than a decade, really, and it did. It just fell apart. Well, it was dismembered. Who knows what's going to happen in our society? All sorts of things, and our freedom of speech could be completely taken away. All right, well, that's it for today. Please join me tomorrow for another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.